This is Punt's Private Eye. I'm not here right now. Please leave a message.
Punt, it's Tracy. I've got a story for you. You've heard of Pavlov's dog? Well, he was adopted by Fu Manchu after he played the Red Queen. Watch out for the blue eyes. Just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean they're not out to get you. Oh, and while you think about it, why don't you pass the time by playing a little solitaire?
It was a bit cryptic, to be honest. Was Tracy stuck on the Times crossword? Why had he chosen to reveal my next assignment in riddles? And why solitaire? In Britain, we call it patience. Or we did until the arrival of that computer version. So was there an American connection here? I dealt myself a hand, and something very odd happened. Just as I turned over the Queen of Diamonds, a package arrived. An old vinyl record.
You got a hold on me.
It was Frank Sinatra, old Blue Eyes himself. Blue Eyes. Tracy's message. Quickly I wound back. I needed to listen to that message again.
You've heard of Pavlov's dog? Well, he was adopted by Fu Manchu after he played the Red Queen. Watch out for the blue eye.
Right, we've got Blue Eyes and Red Queen, but what about Pavlov's dog and Fu Manchu? Because Pavlov was real. That Ivan Pavlov, widely known for first describing the phenomenon of conditioning, but Fu Manchu is fictional. Character first featured in a series of novels by English author Sax Rohmer, has become an archetype of the evil criminal genius, has inspired numerous other characters, Ming the Merciless from Flash Gordon, James Bond adversary Dr. No, and Dr. Yen Lo from The Manchurian Candidate. The novel, written by Richard Condon, and the film, directed by John Frankenheimer, starring Frank Sinatra. Of course, The Manchurian Candidate. Everyone knows the phrase, and that it's about brainwashing, and that it's just a story. Hello?
Good. You see, Punt, you need to stick to the facts to get to the fiction, but you also need to stick to the fiction to get to the facts. Is it really just a story, or is that just a story? I want you to find the real Manchurian candidate. Did he exist then? And more to the point, might he exist now?
Yes, I understand. There was something very insistent in Tracy's voice, okay. And I felt strangely drawn towards the idea of mind control and whether or not it only exists in the realm of fiction.
Yes, Tracy. Goodbye.
This meant starting in the realm of fiction, for which my private guide was David Seed, professor of English at Liverpool University, who knows the film and novel inside out.
An American GI comes back from fighting in Korea, and he receives a medal, the highest medal in America. So he's welcomed home as a real hero. Then a sergeant who was in his platoon starts having nightmares about a brainwashing session that he and the hero were at.
Shoot Bobby Raymond. Through the
fourth. The hero is played by Lawrence Harvey, and the second protagonist, a member of his platoon in Korea, Sergeant Marco, was played by Frank Sinatra.
Why? Why is all of this being done? What have they built you to do?
I don't know.
And it's gradually revealed, while in captivity, the hero has been brainwashed to assassinate the American presidential candidate at one of the political conventions.
They can make me do anything, Ben.
He's been taken over, really. Taken over mentally.
Anything.
We'll see, kid. We'll see what they can do and we'll see what we can do.
The will power of the Manchurian candidate seems always weak. It seems to go by the board. So if this person can be programmed to do the worst possible things, the implication for us as viewers or readers of the novels, maybe we're as susceptible as he is. It has nothing to do with conscious volition, moral scruples or anything like that. It's a way of getting round all these moral reservations.
What is the consciousness of guilt but the arena floor rushing up to meet the falling trapeze artist? Without it, a bullet becomes a tourist flying without responsibility through the air. Raymond's consciousness of guilt, that rouge lip print of original sin, had been wiped off. He had been made unique, exculpated of the consciousness of guilt.
Raymond can't remember anything that happens to him when his alter ego, the communist assassin, is activated.
He has two triggers. One's verbal, which is delivered over the telephone.
Raymond Shaw, please.
This is he.
Raymond, why don't you pass the time by playing a little solitaire?
So there's a verbal trigger, and there's an image trigger, which is the Queen of Diamonds. So as soon as the Queen of Diamonds comes up, he goes off to do what they've programmed him to do.
So if I'm going to look into this further, David, what advice would you give me? What should I be looking for?
I think the really dangerous thing would be to say, oh, this is fiction, so it has no connection with reality.
Where are the sort of boundaries of fact and fiction?
Hopelessly blurred, I'm afraid. The trouble is that during the 1970s, when the CIA was coming under investigation, they apparently destroyed a lot of the most sensitive files. Now, who can verify that? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't.
Shredded CIA documents. As with many a mystery, the truth is out there, but in very thin strips. Surely there must be some documents left. As any good investigator would say, hopelessly blurred boundaries are my business, baby. What I needed was an asset with knowledge of what the CIA had been up to in its fabled headquarters in Langley, Virginia.
Now, number 14 is what we're looking for.
And I found my asset not in Virginia, but, Somerset. Dominic Stretfield, author of Brainwash, has poured through a gratifying number of CIA documents that escaped the shredder. And it seems the fictional account of mind control paranoia very much had its origins in reality.
It started in the show trials in the Soviet Union in the mid-1930s, when Stalin was purging his political enemies. But what he actually did was arrest the people who'd been behind the revolution in the first place. These were great heroes of the Soviet Union, and put them on trial in public with the press present to witness them confessing to all kinds of crimes. They were planning to overthrow the Soviet Union. They were planning to blow up the Kremlin. They were planning to do all kinds of implausible things. At the end of which, they confessed to this long list of crimes, and then they said, our crimes are so heinous that we must be executed. And they were. And this raised eyebrows all around the world, but it only really took off following the Korean War, when Allied British and American officers and soldiers were taken prisoner and then lined up in front of communist microphones, and they say, oh, we used chemical weapons. Oh, we used biological weapons. We did it deliberately to target the peasants of North Korea. So they tape recorded them and they broadcast them live and rebroadcast them again and again and again on the radio. All kinds of details emerged of these crimes that, once again, not only had they not happened, they couldn't possibly have happened. And at that point, the governments of the West go, well, look, it's one thing the Soviets doing this to their own people. It's another thing when they're doing it to us. If the Soviets can use this technique, whatever it is, and turn good, God-fearing Western Americans into Soviets like that, and they didn't appear to have been beaten senseless, what are they up to? Tampering with their minds. Some kind of psychological voodoo is being practiced behind the Iron Curtain, and we need to know what it is. An almost unprecedented series of experiments begin that are to go on for about 30 years in various intelligence agencies into all of these techniques that could possibly be used to describe brainwashing.
Dominic agreed to show me some of the documents he'd discovered, and they gave themselves a pretty wide brief.
1st of January 1950, estimated overt and covert activities of blank. CIA will consider other special or unorthodox methods such as brain damage, sensory stimulation, hypnosis, so-called black psychiatry, Pavlovian conditioning, brainwashing or any other methods having pertinence for such procedures as interrogation, subversion or seduction.
Brain damage, sensory stimulation, black psychiatry. Never has the phrase special and unorthodox seemed more apt. For a start, if you were in the CIA, the 60s started a decade early.
Quite quickly after Korea, the Central Intelligence Agency started work into barbiturates, amphetamines, carried out by the CIA on CIA staff. 14th of July 1954. Our experiments on tolerance to LSD-25 have been proceeding well. I have seven patients who have now been taking the drug for more than 42 days. All seven are quite tolerant to both the physiological and mental effects of the drug. We've tried to break through this tolerance by administering double, triple and quadruple doses.
But what did they hope to achieve, unless they were assigned to take a boat on a river in order to trail plasticine porters with looking glass ties? It all begged a rather obvious question.
Did they ever come close to succeeding in these experiments?
It didn't work. It wasn't going to work. It doesn't work.
A firm and definite answer, unlike the ones you'd get from a suspect on a quadruple dose of LSD. But what about some of those other special and unorthodox experiments? Dominic had mentioned two things which feature heavily in the Manchurian Candidate: hypnosis and Pavlovian conditioning.
1st of January 1952. Could we seize a subject and in the space of an hour or so, by post-hypnotic control, have him crash an aeroplane or wreck a train?
Crash an aeroplane? Wow.
Hypnosis experiment and research, 10th of February 1954, building 13. Miss Blank was instructed, having previously expressed a fear of firearms in any fashion, that she would use every method at her disposal to awaken Miss Blank, who was now in a deep hypnotic sleep, and failing this, she would pick up a pistol nearby and fire it at Miss Blank. Miss Blank carried out these suggestions to the letter. She pointed the gun, she pulled the trigger. Didn't have any ammunition in, and afterwards, when she was woken up, she later refused to touch the gun because she was so scared of guns she didn't know she'd even touched it.
I drew two conclusions from this. One, Derren Brown may have worked at the CIA, and two, the Manchurian Candidate was clearly based on actual experiments of the era.
I am sure that all of you have heard that old wives' tale, Yen stated, which is concerned with the belief that no hypnotized subject may be forced to do that which is repellent to his moral nature, whatever that is, or to his best interests. That is nonsense, of course. The point I am making is that those who speak of the need for hypnotic suggestion to fit a subject's moral code should revise their concepts.
However, just doing experiments doesn't mean very much. The important thing is, do the experiments work? Can you use a trigger mechanism to transform a sleeper agent into a ruthless killer? I had to find an expert witness, and Dr. Michael Heap took the stand, a hypnotist and clinical psychologist who has indeed been an expert witness in court cases.
You can use triggers. You can set up a post-hypnotic suggestion, for example, that after you've brought the person out of hypnosis, you'll tap on the table and then they'll immediately feel compelled to take off their shoe.
And is it possible with this trigger system for something like that to lie dormant for a while and then to bring someone out?
Well, there have been claims in the past. For example, there was a case where it was complained that this lady, every time she heard this particular music, she would squawk like a chicken. And she continued doing this in everyday life, and it was embarrassing for her. Now, I suppose in theory it's possible, but the consensus now is that you cannot use hypnosis to make people do things against their will. And the idea that you can permanently reprogram a person in this way wouldn't be supported by the evidence.
In other words, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drown someone and not remember doing it. But what about the secretaries firing pistols at each other? Was that explicable?
It sounds feasible. You'd have to look at how the whole thing was set up. The studies that were done in the 60s and 70s used suggestions such as, you will now throw a beaker of acid over the experimenter. Now, it wasn't really acid, but the subjects didn't know that. And, yes, some people were willing to do these things, but it didn't seem to matter whether they were hypnotised or not.
Ah, I see.
So in the case of being told to shoot somebody, maybe it was because he was told so by somebody in authority and assumed that this was a bona fide activity that he was being asked to carry out. It appears to be the context in which these activities take place, the pressures and the demands that cause people to behave in the way they do, rather than this thing called hypnosis.
So, really, the idea you could use hypnosis to persuade someone to carry out an assassination?
I would call that science fiction, yes.
Yes, exhaustive experiments with drugs, hypnosis and conditioning were certainly conducted, but the dream of controlling another person's mind was a long way off, unless you count making them squawk like a chicken. But the fact we still hear the phrase Manchurian Candidate today indicates that the dream has never gone away. It's just covered by official secrecy. It was time to bring the investigation into the present. And just as the fiction of the Cold War gives us a window into the fears of that age, so does the fiction of our own time, as Professor David Seed had explained to me.
Ever since the 70s, there have been a whole series of spy novels where the real villains aren't communists or Soviets, but actually renegade people within the CIA. The Bourne trilogy, The Bourne Identity, for instance, is a good example of that. That is using the idea of an implanted memory, a sort of implanted identity, embedded in a character by the CIA. He's also been trained as a kind of super assassin. So the CIA are trying to kill him because he would be embarrassing evidence of what they used to do. So it's a sort of a story of betrayal of an American by his own agencies, growing out of the fear that somebody, an individual or an agency, could actually interfere with your mind in a way that you're not really conscious of at all.
So in the 21st century, we face exactly the same questions. Implanted memories? Science fiction? Or based somewhere in fact? Hypnosis and drugs are the Sputnik 1 of mind control. Nowadays, we could have a whole space station up there. But is there any hard evidence of high-tech mind control? Well, yes. I was shown some by a new asset, Dr. Neil Davison.
So this is a document which is a patent, a 1994 patent submitted by US Air Force researchers.
The author of Non-Lethal Weapons, he'd come armed with documents.
A descriptive title of the invention, a method for encoding and transmitting speech by means of the radio frequency hearing phenomena. This device will put speech into your head without you actually needing any physical sound waves.
This was truly bizarre. Microwave technology being used to project voices straight into our heads.
One of the main areas is this interest in whether you could use it as some kind of psychological warfare tool or to try and have a psychological effect over someone by being able to transmit speech that only one can hear, that you could have an effect on their behaviour.
The 21st century Manchurian Candidate doesn't need playing cards or phones. You just beam microwaves at them, remembering to pierce film lid first. I definitely had to get some more intel. It was looking promising. David Hambling writes for New Scientist magazine, and I tell you that because some of what he told me proves that when it comes to science, truth really is stranger than fiction. Anyone with bushy hair or wearing spectacles should take special note.
When the microwave pulse strikes your head, basically it's your inner ear, it causes a momentary, very slight expansion, and that produces a click, which is actually audible, and that's known as voice to skull, so you can transmit direct to someone's skull. The US Army carried out a research project to see whether they could actually transmit a voice, and they found that in the laboratory, they could, by transmitting a series of clicks, they could modulate it into what could be heard as a sound. Now, they only used very primitive sounds. They used the one-syllable words for the numbers 1 to 10, and they proved that they could intelligibly send those.
Right, so through their own skull, they were hearing the numbers 1 to 10.
Yes.
And that's all documented?
That's all documented. Colin Key, the Australian researcher who was researching the noises made by meteors, found that some of his staff could hear the effect he was generating and some couldn't. And he found out the ones that could were two girls who had afro hairstyles. And it turned out that that was what was acting as the transducer. He found that he couldn't hear the effect when he wasn't wearing glasses, but when he put his glasses on, he could hear it.
Right. So if you're an army unit and you've got someone with curly hair and glasses,
they might be able to hear things that other people
secret
can't.
Signals.
There's one great quote for someone saying, you know, I can hear the thing, but I still don't believe it. So the way they proved it was by training rats to respond to a click. There's another guy who makes chinchillas fall over using another electromagnetic non-lethal weapon.
Right.
Chinchillas have conveniently large auditory nerves.
Is there anything else that they've got up their sleeves?
In terms of the means of projecting a voice, there was a project called Voice of God that used two intersecting infrared laser beams. And at the point where they intersect, the field level was high enough to ionise the air and create, in effect, a fireball. And they found that by turning the beams on and off, they could modulate that and they could actually use it to transmit an intelligible sound. So they could actually create a talking fireball.
Crossed laser beams creating a talking fireball? But this was real, and yet it couldn't be, could it?
The will power of the Manchurian candidate seems always weak. Maybe we're as susceptible as he is.
Was someone messing with my head? Had Tracy's message subliminally triggered me?
The really dangerous thing would be to say, oh, this is fiction, so it has no connection with reality. Reality. Reality.
I unplugged my microwave, threw out Frank's greatest hits, and shredded those playing cards. I wasn't sure of anything anymore, and certainly not sure of what might be possible in the future. And Dr. Neil Davison had more documents that were less than reassuring. It seems they still want to get into our minds.
Now, these are experiments on samples of brain tissue in a lab by the Air Force at the University of Nevada. I quote, "Our research is to lay the foundation for developing non-lethal, stunning / immobilising weaponry based on radio frequency radiation, potentially capable of selectively altering exocytosis, the process underlying neurotransmitter release and hence nervous system functioning," unquote. And just a quote from this document from 2004, "By studying and modelling the human brain and nervous system, the ability to mentally influence personnel is also possible." There is a sense from certainly research proposals that in some areas conspiracy may be becoming reality. With this shift towards targeting the brain, this does open up profound implications if weapons were to be developed that affect, influence or control behaviour.
There were a lot of big words involved with those brain experiments, but the biggest word of all was the shortest, the word if. I was lost in a world of exocytosis controlling neurotransmitter release, blinded by science and concerned that a talking fireball might tell me to squawk like a chicken. I wanted reassurance that there is no immediate candidate, Manchurian or not, that would make reliable mind control possible. I needed to talk to a neuroscientist, and Dr. Kathleen Taylor, who has written on the science of thought control, stepped forward.
I would hesitate to say that it's never going to be possible, because in the last 10, 15, 20 years, we've done an awful lot of things that people would have said were impossible before. But I think the people who talk about, you know, microwaves controlling your thoughts and all this sort of thing are seriously underestimating the complexities involved. You know, we can do crude mechanical implants at the moment. We can see a certain amount of what the brain's doing thanks to imaging techniques. But the thought of actually implanting a thought, for example, I mean, you know, that we're way off that.
What would be the level of technology we'd need for that?
Well, you'd need an awful lot more fine detail for a start. We cannot get down to the kind of grain, the level of detail that you would need. You can get a crude idea of watching sort of gallons and gallons of neurons all together working to achieve some decision or make a movement or something like that. So you can get a crude idea of what's going on. But getting down to the level of sort of individual networks of neurons is just not possible at the moment. There's also the issue of you have to achieve the kind of control that is not controlling everything. So it's very difficult. You have to find a midway whereby you can send the person, or say if you take the Manchurian candidate where somebody was programmed to be an assassin, you have to control them enough to make them do what you want to do, but you also have to leave them enough flexibility so that, for example, if circumstances change, they can manage. You know, if you're micromanaging it too much, then you get a very inflexible, if you like, robot obeying your orders, and that's really difficult in real-world situations because things always muck up, go wrong, change at the last minute, etc.
Now, is this an area where the intelligence agencies have been sort of ahead?
Well, I don't work for the CIA, so it's difficult for me to say because that research is not published, typically. I doubt they're ahead of it enough to have come up with an effective means of mind control, let's put it that way.
But could I be totally sure she wasn't in the CIA? Was I in the CIA? Are we all in the CIA? No, we're not, as Dr. Taylor's calm, cool evaluation made clear. Microwaves creating one-syllable numbers in your head are one thing. Having them control you is another. And in case we forget, the Manchurian candidate is snapped out of it by having Frank Sinatra shout at him. So it's not all bad. It was case mostly closed. World leaders can rest easy that the Manchurian candidate is fiction and mind control very far from a reality. But you can also be sure that someone, somewhere, is working on a patent for it. As for me, I'm going to pass the time by playing a little solitaire. Or maybe not. Hold on to